Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Devyani International's earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and anyone who wishes to ask a question may enter star and one on their touch-tone phone. To remove yourself from the queue, please enter star and two. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Anoop Poojari from CDR India. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Devyani International's Q4 FY24 earnings conference call. We have with us Mr. Ravi Jaipuria, Non-Executive Chairman of the company, Mr. Raj Gandhi, Non-Executive Director, Mr. Virag Joshi, CEO and Whole-Time Director, and Mr. Manish Dawar, CFO and Whole-Time Director of the company. We'll initiate the call with opening remarks from the chairman, followed by key financial highlights by the CFO. Post that, we'll have the forum open for a question-and-answer session. Before we begin, I would like to point out that some statements made in today's call may be forward-looking in nature, and a disclaimer to this effect has been included in the results presentation shared with you earlier. I would now request Mr. Jaipuria to make his opening remarks.
Good afternoon, everyone. I warmly welcome you all to our earnings conference call to discuss the business performance of DIL for the fourth quarter and the financial year 2023-24. In a tough consumption year, we have diligently focused on our strategic expansion goals over the course of the year. We opened 256 new stores, including 47 in the fourth quarter. As of March 31st, our total store count has reached 1,782, including the 283 KFC stores we acquired in Thailand on January 18th, 2024. The year was also marked by successful acquisition and seamless integration of the Thailand KFC business. The transaction, which was completed during quarter four, has been a significant milestone for us. This development has expanded our international footprint, and the same is in line with our long-term growth objectives of having a mix of international businesses. The business in Thailand is performing reasonably well, and the results are in line with our expectations. Alongside our global expansion, we have also been working on a strategy to enhance our domestic footprints of food courts business in response to India's emergence as a major destination for travel, tourism, and shopping. The domestic travel market is picking up very well, and we are seeing religious tourism as one of the important thrust areas. India is also gaining importance in the international market for medical tourism and a value for money shopping destination. All these changes are structural in nature and here to stay. There is a common theme that runs across this phenomenon, that is food on the go. With this strategy and to cater to the rising quick trend, we are making food courts as one of the important pillars of our growth aspiration across various consumption channels and touch points of travel and shopping. Our existing bouquet of brands will help us with this strategy. We have also tested the concept of food courts in multiple locations across such touch points. Needless to add that we are pleased with the consumer response and performance of our existing food courts. With this objective, I am pleased to state that DIL has entered into a strategic partnership with PVR INOX to develop and operate the business of food courts at shopping malls across the country to co-promote movies and food. This will not only help us strengthen our presence at various malls in the country, but will also give a boost to our brands and the food court business. This agreement is in addition to other existing strategic tie-ups for food courts across highways, malls, railways, apart from some of the airports and highways that we already operate. As I said before, food courts will be one of the key focus areas for us going forward, apart from our existing core brands. Consumer sentiment continued to be weak throughout the year. Weak disposable income, tight liquidity position, local consumption, geopolitical situation were the major drivers for the weak demand, consumer demand. The Nigerian currency continues to significantly depreciate during quarter four, resulting in a significant impact on the full year results of DIL. Coming to India, we expect things to improve post the elections and some stability on the West Asia geopolitical situation. In our view, the weak consumer sentiment and depressed consumer spending is temporary and short-lived. Amid these challenges, our operating and financial performance has remained stable, and we continue to invest in the business for long-term growth. To successfully navigate the dynamic and evolving QSR landscape, we have implemented multiple initiatives this year, including menu optimization, reducing wastage, enhancing cost controls, and improving operational efficiency. These initiatives have helped us to deliver the results. To sum up, we believe in the long-term potential of the Indian QSR industry. As we actively grow our presence, we are strategically positioned to tap into this opportunity, ensuring sustainable growth and value creation for our stakeholders. With this, I would like to conclude my address and now hand over to Manish for the financial highlights. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jaipuria. Good evening, everyone. A very warm welcome and thank you for your valuable time for attending DIL's Quarter 4 and FY24 Earnings Conference Call, our 11th call since the listing in August 21. Having completed the Thailand acquisition, our total store count now stands at 1,782 stores as of the year-end. We have a footprint of 1,692 stores across our core brands, out of a total store count of 1,782. This consists of 941 stores for KFC, 572 stores for Pizza Hut, and 179 stores for Costa Coffee. Our store distribution in India continues to remain marginally in favor of non-metro destinations. The operating revenue for FY24 was ₹3,556 crores, a growth of almost 19% over the previous year. Indian business witnessed a growth of 12.3% over previous financial year. Quarter 4 FY24 revenue stood at 1,047 crores, representing a 38.7% Y-on-Y increase. This was supported by Thailand acquisition and new store openings. We have consolidated Thailand numbers with effect from January 18, 2024. The gross margin for the consolidated business, including Thailand, was 70.3% for the full year versus 70% for the previous year, an improvement of 30 basis points on a full year basis. The margins for quarter four were lower because of Thailand consolidation and a significant currency impact in Nigeria. As you know, structurally, Thailand and Nigeria operate at a lower gross margin for KFC business versus the Indian business. The brand contribution for the full year was at 15.5% versus 18.7% for the previous year. The deleverage in top line because of lower ADS numbers across KFC and Pizza Hut along with Nigerian currency issue has led to the impact on brand contribution margins. The pre-index margins for the full year for the consolidated business was 10.7%. Reported EBITDA on a post-index basis including Thailand for FY24 was 18.3%. During the quarter, the same number was 16.6%. Consolidated operating EBITDA on a pre-Ind AS basis was ₹96 crores versus ₹79 crores in the previous quarter. The Nigerian currency continues to weaken in quarter four. During the financial year, Nigerian Naira has got depreciated by almost 200% versus the USD. As a result of this, Nigeria business has recorded an impact of ₹236 crores forex loss on account of USD denominated liabilities. Out of this amount, ₹90 crores has been recorded as exceptional item in the P&L for the full year and ₹147 crores has been recorded under other comprehensive income. The impact of significant depreciation in Nigerian currency has been taken as part of exceptional items in quarter four unlike the previous quarter. In view of the above, DIL has also taken a full impairment of its investment of Rs. 116 crores in Nigerian business through its subsidiary RB Enterprises. There is no impact of such impairment in the consolidated financial results of the group because the impairment has been taken in standalone books. The PBT for FY24 on a consolidated basis was Rs. 3.7 crores. The main drivers for this, the variance compared to the previous year, has been significant currency impact out of Nigeria, deleverage impact coming out of Indian business, and marginal impact because of Thailand consolidation. With respect to RD Thailand acquisition, DIL has recorded the purchase price allocation on a provisional basis. As per the accounting standards, DIL has a measurement period of up to 12 months from the date of acquisition, and hence to that extent, this is subject to final adjustments. The total debt in the books at a consolidated level is Rs. 910 crores as of March 31st, 24. Out of this, Rs. 835 crores in the bank debt, consisting of Rs. 470 crores at international and Rs. 365 crores in India. The gearing position, despite this debt on a consolidated basis, sits comfortably below 1 as of the year end, and debt to EBITDA coverage is almost 1.28 times. Taking the discussion to our core brands, KFC in India added 106 new stores in FY24, reaching a total count of 596 stores at the end of the year. Average daily sales for quarter 4 was 93,000 versus 104,000 in the previous quarter. Revenues at Rs. 494 crores during the quarter grew 11.3% on a Y-on-Y basis. Gross margins for KFC during the quarter were 69.9%, thereby reflecting an improvement of 50 basis points over the previous quarter. Brand contribution remained healthy at 19% for the current quarter. During the year, Pizza Hut added 61 new stores, reaching a total count of 567 stores in India. Revenue for the full year was Rs. 709 crores versus Rs. 700 crores in the previous year. ADS was Rs. 32,000 versus Rs. 37,000 in the previous quarter. Gross margins for the quarter came in at 77.3% versus 75.8% in the previous quarter. Brand contribution was Rs. 7 crores for the quarter with margins at 4.4%, which was slightly lower on a quarter-on-quarter basis, mainly due to the ADS deleverage impact. Costa Coffee added 67 new stores during the financial year, reaching a cumulative store count of 179 stores. Quarter 4 FY24 revenue was Rs. 45 crores with a growth of 13.6% on quarter-on-quarter and 36.3% on a year-on-year basis, driven by expansion of new stores. The gross margin was 76.7% in quarter 4. Brand contribution in quarter 4 stood at 17.9%, an improvement of 3% versus the previous quarter. To conclude, we want to reiterate our commitment to the ambitious growth plans within the Indian QSR market. As we continue to expand, we remain committed to improving our financial performance, reflecting our emphasis on prudent financial management and creating long-term value for our shareholders. On that note, I would like to request the moderator to open the forum for any questions or suggestions that you may have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and 1 on their touchtone phone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use only handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Tejas Shah from Avendus Spark. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Just wanted to start with, wanted to pick your brain on how are you seeing demand scenario evolving now for both the brands in India, or rather all the three brands in India, and how should we think about this year both on store expansion and SSG, as how are you kind of budgeting for this year?
Hi, Tejas. So Tejas, as we said, I mean, the last 1 year demand has been weak, and we do hope that, let's say, post the elections, we should start to see some improvement. At the same time, you know that quarter one is seasonally a better quarter compared to quarter four, and therefore you will see some better numbers in the current quarter. Having said that, there is no change in our overall thinking. We remain bullish on the QSR space in medium to long term. And that's the reason we continue to kind of invest in our brands, in the new strategic tie-ups, in Thailand acquisition. So therefore, as far as we are concerned, there could be some, let's say, quarterly adjustments here and there, but we are absolutely bullish on the overall opportunity that is there in QSR, especially in India, and therefore we continue to press ahead and invest.
Just elaborating on that, so election should not be a trigger, right? In the sense, it's post-election, is it just a hope or are you seeing some, you have some granular data which you can't share, obviously, which gives you that hope that demand will bounce back after election?
So Tejas, obviously, we'll not be able to share the granular data, but on the ground, again, it's too early to comment, but we are seeing some green shoots. And we hope that they are kind of lived long. So let's see. I mean, obviously there are some green shoots which are coming out.
Sure. And second and last, this pivot that we are making towards aggressive or more focused expansion on food courts. So just wanted to know what consumer insight or market insight have led us to kind of make this pivot.
See, if you look at the new generation consumers, or if you look at, let's say, the current trends, it's people want more choices. They want quick choices, right? At the same time, travel is gaining a very significant movement within the country. Shopping is gaining significant movement on an overall basis, and therefore, through this whole strategy, we want to be available at all the channels and touch points. So if you look at, let's say, despite the overall slowdown, the travel and tourism traffic is almost at an all-time high. India is becoming a good international destination for reasonable shopping also. So we are seeing a lot of tourists coming into the country and they've started shopping in metro destinations. And you would have also noticed that therefore with this strategy, we talked about a small railway joint venture. We've talked about a strategic tie-up for highways openings. We already have talked about PVR, as Mr. Jaipuria has alluded in his speech. So we are trying to kind of make food courts as a comprehensive strategy, which will span across the airports, the food courts, the highways, the malls, and everywhere. So that is how we are approaching it. And within the tourism also, if you see, there's a lot of religious tourism which is gaining momentum. And at some point in time, we've already started working on in terms of how do we get to these religious sites also with the initiatives we've taken.
So how does the store economics of food court work out versus, let's say, our traditional store?
See, food court, because we've been operating food courts for a reasonably long time, obviously not at a scale that we are now anticipating, because the footfalls are high, the consumer choices are available, it's a mix of our own brands and international brands, the profitability is better than the traditional brands, and the payback period also for the food courts are very attractive.
Sure, I'll come back in the queue. Thanks for that.
Sure, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jay Doshi from Kotak. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. A couple of bookkeeping questions to start with. What was the revenue contribution and EBITDA contribution of KFC Thailand in 4Q?
So Jay, we've disclosed the consolidated results and we've disclosed the India results. So therefore, by derivation, you can get to international. Now, within that, let's say if you look at predominantly it has come from Thailand only. So therefore, I mean, you'll be able to get the numbers. Needless to add, because of the currency issues and all, Nigeria is sitting in a negative zone as far as the bottom line is concerned. So therefore, it is predominantly all contributed by Thailand. And what we talked about at the time of acquisition, the business is more or less in line with that. So we've seen some bit of impact of the geopolitical situation in some of the stores in South, but barring that, the business is doing very well.
Sorry, you mentioned predominantly the entire international EBITDA is KFC Thailand.
Largely.
Understood. So that would be close to 30 crores in that case, or somewhere around 37.
I'm not putting a number. Yes, it's largely.
But, so Manish, how do you propose we evaluate the progress of this transaction? Right, normally companies tend to sort of share performance of inorganic acquisitions for at least a year. and then.
So we, Jay, we can evaluate that and come back to you, because as of now, what we were thinking that, for example, India piece is one and the international piece is one. That is how we were planning to kind of disclose. But we take your suggestion on board that for at least a year, we should look at Thailand being given separately. So we will evaluate and come back to you.
It will be very helpful. Time. Second is this, you know, partnership with PVR. Essentially, you know, what is the sort of, you know, if you can give us some color in terms of what would be the contribution of PVR INOX to this partnership? What would be the role of, you know, both the entities, Devyani as well as PVR INOX? And what is the investment you get from them?
See, we are still working on the entire business plan and all, and therefore, obviously, we will not be able to share the investment numbers as of now. But the whole thesis is, if you look at, let's say, the footprint of malls, PVR is a very strong contributor there. And they are one of the favored tenants whenever a good mall or a great mall is coming anywhere, and they are the first ones to get approached for a cinema, because the entire cinema space is more or less like an anchor tenant, and they get to know about this whole mall things being opened on a from a timeline perspective much more and much ahead than us. By the time, let's say, the food courts get ready, by the time the rest of the malls are ready and they are giving to brands for the fit outs and all. And that's where we saw that whole strategic kind of advantage with PVR in terms of going with them. At the same time, if you look at, there is a captive footfall that PVR has in terms of people who are coming to watch movies, people who are PVR loyal fans or loyal customers. And therefore, the objective is to somehow kind of combine the food courts along with PVR so that we are able to kind of co-promote the movies and foods. And if you look at outside the countries, it's a great concept, and it's a very, very significant value creator.
Understood. So primarily the focus to start with will be on the pipeline of malls that are currently under development, and where there would be opportunity to sign contracts, long-term contracts for operations of food court. Devyani's role would be largely operating the food court part. And PVR's role would be, given their relationship with the developers, and they already would have a lot of leases pertaining to. Is that right understanding?
Yeah, broadly it's the right understanding. Plus, all the brands will come from DIL. So, and we have the operational capability and the expertise. And PVR on the other side, obviously in terms of how they are located and how what is the relationship with the landlords and the mall owners. So it's a great win-win combination for both of them.
Sure. Lastly, you know, there are a few investor questions and perhaps concerns around some of the senior management exits that happened in the March quarter. So, you know, your thoughts on this, and, you know, whether we should expect stability going forward, and whether there was any slippage in execution associated with this attrition that you can.
Jesse, we are a large company now, and obviously I absolutely take your point in terms of what you're trying to allude to. But if you look at, typically we have a huge management bandwidth available. We have a huge talent pool available and a bench available. So therefore, there is nothing. I mean, Virag was handling it earlier. He was there even while, let's say, Rahul was there. And Virag continues to handle. So therefore, from that point of view, there's no big change. At the same time, I mean, Rajat, for example, if you look at, has been with the company for almost 13-14 years, and he wanted to move to South, closer to his family. So I think he kind of gave his best to the company in any case. So, I mean, we don't expect any disruption. We don't expect any big change because the strategy remains the same. We've all been working on that defined strategy, and therefore, if at all, things should be better.
Thank you so much. Wish you the very best for FY25.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abneesh Roy from Nuvama Institutional Equity. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Further to the questions on PVR deal, one is, in existing properties, is there any kind of an opportunity available? Second is, around 9 months back, PVR and Costa Coffee had signed the deal. So is it that one is doing well? So now the next level of the relationship is happening. And if you could give some kind of an update on that deal also. Third is in existing property, just like Costa Coffee is also there. Now more such brands of DIL, can they come there?
Well, definitely our first tie-up, which was with Costa and PVR, is doing extremely well. We are very happy with it and we are expanding our plan with them. We are opening Costa Coffees with them on a weekly basis practically. And we have already opened close to 80 Costa Coffees in the PVR, and it will be expanded and it's adding a great value to our business. And also it's a great advertising place because all the consumers who are coming to customers who are coming to PVR are the right consumers for Costa Coffee. So I think it's a great thing for both of us, and we are definitely looking to add more products with PVR, and especially with this JV, which is for the food courts. I think it'll add a lot of value for both of us.
And in the previous question, you mentioned outside India, this co-promotion of foods and movies is far more prevalent and far more successful. Any particular country you want to highlight so that we can get more examples on how this can pan out in India also?
You can look at any of these. So you can look at, for example, take a country like UK. Take US for example. I mean, all of the cinemas and screens are surrounded by the food courts or eating joints, and they have a strategic tie-up in terms of both as a combo deals and so on and so forth. So it is. So you can find. Yeah, even UAE also. So.
Sure. And the genesis of this, is it because slowdown is being felt both by PVR and for you also? So is this more because of this, because PVR and you both have existed for many years? So why now? Is the slowdown one part of the reason? Because you did mention the co-promotion, you did mention that both can promote each other. So is slowdown one of the reasons for doing this now?
No, it's nothing to do with slowdown. It's just that it takes time to build relationships. And we started our relationships by having a joint venture with Costa. And when both of us felt happy and they were both success and it was successful, then we said, what else can we do? And that's the next step we have taken.
So understood. The last question on Thailand. So one wanted to understand competitive intensity there versus India in that part of the business, and second, the gross margins seem to be lower there, as you said. What's the reason for that, and any progress we can see in 3-4 years in terms of the margin gap between the two business?
There will be some scope to improve the margin, but you know, the volumes per store are much higher there than what it is in India, so it makes up in the other format instead of, and the rentals are much lower there. So it, you know, overall, that's what the margins are in that part of the country, and overall it's a very good business, and especially we are market leaders. I mean, KFC is the market leader in Thailand. Against 1,000 stores of KFC, there are most probably 200 or 250 stores of McDonald's.
Okay.
So Avnish, Thailand is more of more mass market for the brand, and therefore that's the reason the focus is more on the number of transactions rather than the margins, and therefore on an overall basis that's a great model to be in. If you see the Thailand eating out culture is very, very strong, and fried chicken is one of the important contributors for the street food. So that is what you are competing, and that's what your future customers are also. So that's the reason the KFC positioning is a little different in Thailand versus India.
Sure, understood. Thanks a lot. That's all from me. Thank you.
Sure, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Devanshu Bansal from NK Global. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my questions and congratulations on a good margin execution in the quarter. Just small bit on that food court bit, Manish. Is it like food court within theater premises or the common food court that is there in the malls? Just wanted a clarification on that.
So it is the new properties that we are discussing, Devanshu. So it is the common food court in the mall, not inside the, whereas if you look at the Costa Coffee tie-up that we have with Costa, that is inside the movie premises. So this is outside. And how do we design, how do we make it contiguous? Obviously, that comes in terms of what is the property availability, how is it designed, and so on and so forth. So that is that will really depend on property to property.
Got it. And will it be like only our brands, or I just want to check, would competing brands be comfortable with such kind of a relationship? Because there are global precedents, so any views here?
See, it depends on the nature of the property and size of the property. Obviously, our preference would be to kind of put in our bouquet of brands which are there. And we have a good bouquet of brands. And let's say apart from that, if there is a space available, we can look at other brands as well. So as you know, I mean, we do run some of the mall food courts in Calcutta or in Noida. And we do have the other brands in those food courts as well.
Got it, Manish. Got it. And secondly, I wanted to check, there has been a strong sequential improvement in gross margin across our core format. This is like all-time high gross margins in our limited reporting history that is there. So wanted to check, what are the steps that we have taken to improve this, and is this a sustainable trend?
It is a sustainable trend, Devanshu. I mean, obviously, post the hyperinflation that we saw, things have stabilized. They have not kind of come down dramatically, but stabilization, given our negotiations, obviously, we are seeing good results. We've also done menu optimization, which Mr. Jaipuria talked about in his speech. That is also helping. How do we look at the promotions? That's the other piece that we continuously evaluate. So see, I mean, in the middle of the current consumer sentiment that we are, we take all the steps to kind of make sure that the margins are protected, and that is what we are continuously kind of striving towards and delivering.
And a follow-up on this, so Manish, under such weak demand scenarios, is this a significant saving from promotions, or is it like more cost-cutting, etc., supply chain efficiencies that we're building?
See, promotion is a small element, but obviously there are opportunities available to tweak, because let's say when you're coming out of a hyperinflation, a consumer also is looking for more value for money products. We've introduced the value layers, as we've talked about in the previous calls. But wherever the opportunity is there, I mean, we just kind of keep refining the promotions, make it more effective, make it more targeted. And at the same time, I mean, the cost-saving opportunities also, which are there, we just kind of continue to plug those things as well.
Got it. I have more questions. I'll come back in queue. Thank you, Manish.
Sure. Thanks, Devanshu.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. First question is on Pizza Hut. Now that it's been many quarters into the slowdown, have we, and when I say we, I mean both the franchisees as well as Yum Brands put together, the three parties of you, done some kind of soul searching as to what is really going wrong with the Pizza Hut format? I understand that there is an overall slowdown. I understand that pizza as a category is affected more. However, if you look at the difference in performance of SSSG versus Pizza Hut versus the other competitor that you have, the difference in the SSSG is very stark, like 15 percentage points, 10 percentage points, and so on. So why is it that on a competitive basis we are losing out? I can understand the overall macro trends and the consumer being under pressure, etc., etc., but at least on a market share basis, we should not be performing so badly. So what is the reason for that, and what are the steps we are doing to address it?
Thanks, Percy. Great question. So I think let me just give you a little bit of history so that you're able to understand what is happening currently to Pizza Hut. So Pizza Hut, as you know, has always been a premium brand in the minds of consumers. So be it the quality, be it the pricing, be it the overall look and feel of the store and so on and so forth. And when we got into this hyperinflation, we tried to experiment with fun flavor pizza. And that kind of just got the overall pricing table down. And I think in hindsight, maybe, yes, we can call ourselves wiser. But probably that's where somewhere I think the brand positioning also got impacted, because the premium consumers who were used to coming to Pizza Hut with a particular expectation, while let's say Fun Flavor Pizza was available at a much more attractive price point, but it did not resonate well with the consumer expectation and the consumer psyche. And probably that's the reason why, let's say, I think it's kind of impacted the brand so much, and that will take some time to recover. We have taken initiatives in terms of putting more money on the premium side of pizzas, putting more money on advertising and marketing so that we are able to win back the consumers. We are doing product innovations. You would have seen this whole Melts range recently. So therefore, I mean, we are taking all the steps to make sure that Pizza Hut kind of comes back to its original positioning. But we are still not seeing that in numbers. And that's the reason we've kind of slowed down Pizza Hut expansion a little bit. And we are a little more cautious there. So we are not able to kind of go wrong again on this one. So.
So two sub-questions to this, in light of the fact that Fun Flavor is basically what you've identified as a culprit, is that something that you would want to discontinue? And second sub-question is that we've seen this happening across many brands over the last 2-3 years, that all the brands have launched more affordable variants. Even in KFC, you have which has been a premium brand, you have launched meals at 99 and you have launched that roll at 119 or something like that. And we have not seen an adverse effect on that for the overall brand and the other offerings. So why is it that this kind of an adverse offering, adverse impact is happening only in Pizza Hut?
See, it's a different proposition, Percy. So let's take KFC first. So the KFC core consumer is all about chicken on the bone. And we've not touched chicken on the bone at all, whether it is the pricing or the quality or the pricing table and so on and so forth. Now, in consumers' mind, a pizza is a pizza, right? So let's say if you're able to get a pizza at 79 rupees or 99 rupees versus a pizza at, let's say, 200 rupees, in their mind, it's the same pizza. While, let's say, the ingredients are different, the toppings are different, the cheese is different. But from a consumer point of view, a pizza is a pizza. Whereas for KFC, it's a very, very distinctive proposition. So probably that is the reason why we are suffering more on Pizza Hut. Whereas KFC, for example, when you talk about the wraps and the rolls, it's more of a side. Whereas Pizza to Pizza is more of a main proposition. So
Understood. Second question was on the margins. As someone just mentioned, your gross margins are at an all-time high. And this is at a time where consumer sentiment is poor, demand is poor, we are in negative SSSG zone on both the brands. So don't you think it would be sort of prudent to give back value to the consumers in terms of lower pricing or higher promotions, probably bring down the margins, which might hurt in near term, but that would lead to some kind of revival on the top line? Your thoughts on that?
So, Percy, it depends as to how you want to give back to the consumer. So, let's say if you look at KFC, I mean, we've launched this entry pricing range or a value proposition for consumers in terms of rolls and wraps and all. So, that's a way to attract new consumers. And therefore, that will continue to kind of build your footprint as far as consumers are concerned. On Pizza Hut, we tested with Fun Flavor Pizza. That was the objective, but it did not succeed. So, therefore, I mean, you have to continue to experiment with various models in terms of something works, something does not. and we are at it. So it's not that we are just increasing the price to be able to get to the margins. Pricing is a very small component. It's the whole efficiency which is coming in.
But like, have you done some kind of sensitivity? Supposing you cut your pricing on an average by 2 to 3%, what kind of impact does it have on your overall sales? So what is the price elasticity of demand? Is it more than -1, less than -1? How does it affect?
See, this category is all about large big bag announcements and large. So let's say 2 to 3% will not make any difference from a consumer point of view.
So it is all about how you 2 to 3%, and some of the products it might be more also.
Correct. So which is where I'm going. So therefore you can consolidate that from a different promotion level, and we keep on experimenting with promotions. So there are promotions which are working, where we can kind of continue to be aggressive. There are promotions which are not working, and they are drag. We continue to cut it down. So that's how the margin optimization happens.
Okay. That's all from me, sir. Thanks and all the best.
Yeah. Thanks, Percy.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Srinath V from Bellwether Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Am I audible?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Yeah, so looking at the, reported numbers of the food aggregators and whatever newspaper articles we are able to get of the unlisted aggregators, they seem to be growing at a much faster pace than, most of the listed QSR universe. And so wanted to understand how is the competitive dynamics stacking up? Is there a shift in palate towards more Indian cuisines, or how do you kind of read the this data broadly? Would like to hear your thoughts.
Sure. So if you look at the market that we are trying to address and the market that, let's say, the food aggregators are addressing, that's a far bigger market. So let's say, for example, if I were to talk from Bombay perspective, a vada pav guy who's putting a cart, let's say, in Dadar, he can reach the Andheri consumer, right? And vice versa. Let's say, whereas in our case, so there, for example, they are able to capture a much bigger share of the unorganized market by making sure that the delivery is seamless, by making sure the logistics are working well. And therefore, at the same time, it could well be that there is a vada pav guy in Andheri who's getting impacted and who's not visible. And therefore, all of that gain kind of comes in the food aggregator numbers. So because otherwise, if you look at the food services market, it's not that It is mirroring whatever is happening on the food aggregators. It's just that they continue to expand, they continue to penetrate more, and it's a combination of listed players, it's a combination of unorganized market, it's a combination of local competition, and so on and so forth.
Got it. Because if you kind of look at the outlet growth or restaurants growth, as these platforms are growing north of 20%, so is it that there's a significant new addition of, say, Me Too pizza players or local chicken players? Or have you seen an escalation of competitive intensity, which is periodic, right? In a 10-year window, you do tend to have a couple of years which have heightened competitive activity. Are we in one of those zones right now?
See, it is there, but at the same time, please understand, and I'm quoting something from what was available in public domain. If you go back, a couple of years, there was this whole unearthing whereby at one address, there were some 160 restaurants which were being run, right? And so there, for example, you will take 160 restaurants as the restaurant addition, all with different GST numbers to save different GSTs and so on and so forth. So, so we don't know what is happening behind, right? Whereas, let's say, if you come to the brands, if you come to the listed players, it's all kind of available. You can see it, you can touch it, you can feel it. So,
Got it. My second set of questions would be on Costa Coffee. Our excellent performance both in SSG store addition. So wanted to understand, is there a big trend change? Because we are seeing multiple unlisted players getting funding, and at the same time, we are also seeing very good numbers roll out. So is there some sort of coffee culture change or cafe change? One would be that. And second, wanted to understand how the food menu, qualitatively, how the food menu is playing out in Costa Coffee broadly. That would be great.
Sure. See, coffee is an aspirational category. It is something that kind of appeals to the youth. And therefore it has a great scope. If you look at, let's say, globally also, coffee is a large category. If you look at, I would not say, let's say, Chinese market transition from tea to coffee, but I mean, if you look at the Starbucks performance in China or look at some of the local coffee players in China. So coffee market is here to stay. Coffee is something you cannot get the same quality of coffee that you can get from a barista at your home, whereas tea is something you can easily make the similar tea at home. So therefore, coffee market has that unique niche, and it's here to stay. Now, within that, let's say if there is a category which is kind of growing, there is a category which has a huge potential, you would see multiple players kind of coming in, and therefore you have the local players also coming in, and they are doing very well. So therefore, I mean, we are serious about Costa Coffee, and that's the reason Mr. Jaipuri also talked about that we started experimenting with PVR for putting up coffee machines, Costa Coffee machines, in their cinemas and screens, and that has also done well. So therefore, coffee is a serious category for us. As far as food part is concerned, I would say food contribution is going up. It is still not at the ideal stage. That is still a little bit of work in progress. But if you go to any of the consumer panels, if you look at any of the consumer studies and all, the common feedback is Costa Coffee is the best coffee available in the market.
Yeah. So in the Bombay airport, it's absolutely fantastic. Just want to slip in a last one. Is the delivery of coffee being a trigger point for Costa growing as well as the whole segment growing? Is it moving from a 100% dine-in kind of, format to a pro delivery format or at home consumption of outside brands? Any views?
See, we have consumers coming in and ordering, obviously, home delivery, but you cannot have the same experience at home. I mean, if you deliver cappuccino at home, by the time it reaches home, it's probably 30% of the top is gone. So therefore, I mean, there are those challenges, but there is this increasing traction which is coming in, whereby consumers are asking for coffee to be delivered at home.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashish Kanodia from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi, Manish. So first on the Thailand business part. So, you know, if I look at the last 4-5 quarters data, which was reported earlier, the brand contribution margin was, say, between 14 to 15%. So just maybe not exactly on a number, but was there any meaningful deviation from that kind of a brand contribution margin versus what you have reported this quarter? Because on the international part, the brand contribution margin now stands at 10%. So definitely there's a bit of impact on Nigeria, but I mostly wanted to check if Thailand was still in that ballpark 14-15% range.
Ashish, it is still in that range. Obviously, as I said, there was a little bit of impact in South because of the geopolitical situation, but that is handful of stores. So there was a very, very slight dilution, but directionally it is absolutely the same numbers that we talked about earlier. There's no change.
Sure, Manish. And secondly, in terms of store expansion, so, you know, I think in Pizza Hut you have alluded earlier as well that there will be more calibrated store expansion. So looking at FY25, what are, you know, the thought process in terms of expansion across the core brands in India?
So Ashish, overall, we are looking at a similar number, which is 275 to 300 stores. Obviously, I know and I do realize that in 24 we were a little short, but overall, on an operational basis, I think we've done exceedingly well in the middle of slowdown and all. So we are not changing any of our numbers. It remains same at 275 to 300. KFC remains similar number, no change at all. Pizza Hut, as I said, we'll be a little cautious in terms of how we are opening the store given the overall brand performance. And obviously, we've taken initiatives there, so let's see how it pans out. But otherwise, no big change in strategy.
Sure, Manish. That's helpful. And last bit, you know, this entire discretionary slowdown has been sustaining for almost, say, 1.5-2 years now and has impacted across categories. So when you look at the new, you know, real estate deal signups, are you seeing more lucrative offers And especially if you can just throw some light that do you see that, you know, some of the other non-international brands, are they feeling more pain and they are vacating the some of the good real estate? So is real estate availability and cost becoming a creative here?
See, Ashish, as I've talked about earlier, if you look at India overall as a market, the real estate probably is a challenge only in top 50 to 70 locations. Beyond that, real estate is not a challenge. So let's say if you look at, let's say, prime commercial areas in Delhi, prime commercial areas in Mumbai and some of the other metro towns, that is where the any prime real retail space is heavily fought for. But the moment you step out of the metros or you go to even, let's say, suburban areas of metros and the smaller towns, real estate is not such a big challenge. There is availability. You can negotiate. The brands are respected. Landlords are willing to tweak their terms. They are willing to sit on the table and so on and so forth.
Sure. That's helpful. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Gaurav Jogani from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. So my question one is with regards to the slowdown that you're seeing in the overall ADS numbers. Would you allude it more this on a pricing of the value formats or it is largely due to the reduction in the transaction size across the formats?
Gaurav, it's a combination of both. The transactions have not fallen dramatically. It is the overall pricing coming out of the hyperinflation scenario because the consumer wallet sizes have remained the same. And therefore, typically, let's say when this kind of hyperinflation happens and we were coming out of COVID, obviously it takes a little longer term to kind of have a reset for the consumers from building up the income levels, as well as this whole sentiment and emotion. At the same time, we've also seen, I mean, if you look at the overall credit offtake in the country, the consumer credit offtake is sitting at almost all-time high. So that is also something which is kind of putting pressure on consumers. So I think probably we do feel that we are towards the bottom of it and things should kind of start to improve.
Sure. And Manish, with regards to the Pizza Hut performance, you know, your margin performance, you know, has been much better versus the other peer that you have in the country. And, you know, they alluded for higher marketing spends during the quarter. So haven't you or you have not been mandated by Yum to, you know, to do a similar marketing spends? And how do you look at the margin trajectory for the brand going ahead?
So Gaurav, as far as you know Yum also very well. So it cannot be that Yum can favor one franchisee and not the other one, right? So it has been because we all want to revive Pizza Hut brand between us, Sapphire and Yum. And therefore, it was a common effort. It was a common funds contribution also from their side, from our side, from Yum's side. And that is how we are trying to build the brand back. So it is not that it is any different from us. But despite the additional contribution on marketing and all the common initiatives, obviously our performance is better.
Yeah, so I mean, actually, the question was why it is better, you know, versus them, what has led to this? And how are you looking the margin profile for the brand ahead? Do you think that the margins are now bottomed out and should pick up from here on?
See, from a cost efficiency standpoint, Gaurav, we are almost there. The top line has to pick up to be able to give us back that leverage and building the margins back again to the levels they were at. So we've taken initiatives from a marketing perspective. We've taken initiatives from menu perspective. So let's see how it kind of pans out. If at all, we think the margins can only improve from here.
Sure, Manish. Thank you and all the best.
Thanks, Gaurav.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Robert Marshall from Kusana Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir, you're audible. Please proceed.
Just a question about same-store sales growth and what you're seeing in terms of customer segmentation, so particularly kind of premium versus mass and behavioral. So do you see, in a lot of consumer areas, you've seen the premium customer areas being more robust, but obviously you're seeing kind of the opposite with Pizza Hut. So it sounds like there's something of a specific kind of aspect to that. But I'd be interested in what your kind of your broad perspective are on the same sort of sales growth that you'll see and what is a much more of competition and new additions in the market versus consumer behavior more generally. And just a second question linked on to that, you know, how you're seeing the marginal return on invested capital on your expansions. Again, the slowdown on your Pizza Hut expansion seems to be indicative of that, but it'd be interesting to know what you're seeing in terms of marginal return potential by format.
Sure, Rob. So, Rob, it's always good to have a premium positioning, and obviously if you're able to kind of appeal to more and more consumers and get the consumers into your fold with a premium positioning, it's always the best proposition. And that is how, if you look at KFC and Pizza Hut brands and Costa Coffee for that matter, has been positioned in the minds of the consumers. And obviously, let's say when you get into a hyperinflation and when the consumer wallets and the disposable incomes, they get impacted, you do kind of start to think in terms of how do I increase the value layer. And India, if you look at from a consumption point of view, we are probably addressing the top portion of the market or the consumers. We are not even addressing maybe 25-30% of the population. So from that point of view, a value layer is important because you are able to get more and more consumers into your fold, and that is how you'll be able to build the brands into mass brands and bigger brands. So therefore, there is always this whole delicate equation that needs to be balanced between premium positioning, and at the same time, it appeals to, I'm not saying that we'll be able to appeal to 100% of the population, but given the way the India is growing, we should be in a position to appeal to maybe 40-50% of the population, and that is where that whole thin balance kind of comes in. And that's where we kind of come into the value layers as far as KFC is concerned, or we talked about fun flavor pizzas and so on and so forth. So we kind of keep on working on both sides to be able to maintain the positioning and get more consumers in. So sorry, what was your second question? Yeah, the return on capital, right?
Yes, exactly. But trying that, I mean, I guess, you know, we're tying the previous question onto the same store sales growth that you're seeing between the different brands, you know, how that's impacting it and what is the function of competition, and then the return on capital between the different brands and what that means for your expansion plans.
Yeah. Sure. So if you look at the same store sales growth, if you look at the competition, if you look at the overall market, it's more or less sitting in the same zone. So we've seen the market leader on the burger side giving a negative triple SG. We've seen our peer competitor giving a negative triple SG and negative triple SG on Pizza Hut. The same situation is with us. So the entire market is kind of in that zone. We do expect the consumer sentiment to recover, and therefore this will kind of return back to normal. In the middle of all of this, and despite whatever is happening, the KFC at a unit level economics maintains the payback period of 2 to 3 years. So earlier it was more closer to 2 years, now it is more closer to 2.5 to 3 years kind of range. And therefore, I mean, as long as so it's a good and attractive ROI from that perspective, and that's how we continue to expand.
Thank you. And just could you just compare that against the other brands? So what are you seeing in terms of those payback periods currently?
See, I would not have the insights in terms of the other brands in the market, but let's say within our portfolio, Costa Coffee also sits in the same ballpark numbers of around 2 years. If you look at Vango, it is under 2 years. So therefore, Pizza Hut, obviously, given the current situation, is longer. It's around 5 to 6 years. But otherwise, all of our brands in the portfolio are less than two, for KFC, 2 to 3 years.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing.
Thank you. I hope we have been able to answer all your questions satisfactorily. Should you need any further clarifications or would like to know more about the company, please feel free to contact our investor relations team. Thank you once again for your interest and support and taking the time out to join us on this call. Look forward to interacting with you soon. Thank you.
Thank you, members of the management. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Devyani International, that concludes this conference. We thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.